You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking about the legendary Toronto musical production from which all modern comedy was born.
I think the feeling was just that that talent had been dying to burst out of these kids all this time, and finally, pow, there they were.
Wait for that. Three years before the first episode of SNL, 4 years before the first episode of SCTV, Martin Short, Eugene Levy, Gilda Radner, Andrea Martin, and later Dave Thomas co-starred in a legendary production of a musical called Godspell at the Alexandra Theatre in Toronto. If you are a comedy nerd, and I suppose I am one, you have heard this production referenced again and again in interviews with comedians on shows like WTF or Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. It is the stuff of legend and lore. It's not just that all of those people worked together before any of them were at all famous. It's the scene that they were a part of that summer in Toronto. There are all of these stories you'll hear about the after-show house parties where you might bump into John Candy or Catherine O'Hara or Dan Aykroyd, all at this one house, which is just like minutes away from where I'm recording right now at 1063 Avenue Road.
There really should be a plaque there at 1063 because you have the great comedy stars of the generation come through there.
That is a clip from a new documentary about this legendary production of Godspell. It's about to debut at TIFF, and it is called You Had to Be There, How the Toronto Godspell Ignited the Comedy Revolution, Spread Love and Overalls, and Created a Community that Changed the World in a Canadian Kind of Way. I have heard about this one production of Godspell so many times that I kind of surprised myself to realize I actually have no idea what Godspell is. Turns out it's a musical based on the Gospel of St. Matthew, which perhaps is not the most obvious source material for an entire generation or two of comedy. But facts are facts, and it is from that show that rippled out not just the careers of those aforementioned legendary comedians, but kind of a whole genre and generation of comedy, of improvisational, collaborative sketch comedy, of anti-establishment comedy. It is hard to imagine SNL or SCTV happening without this production. And that's not just about the style of comedy. That is also because Lorne Michaels was hanging out at those house parties at 1063 Avenue Road. He would soon be cherry-picking talent for the first cast of SNL. And from this period, from this house on Avenue Road, all else flows. Phil Hartman, Mike Myers, Jim Carrey, Kids in the Hall, I don't know, Howie Mandel, Will Arnett, Norm Macdonald, later Seth Rogen, Michael Cera, all of that Canadian talent in the Judd Apatow cast of comedians. Judd Apatow, incidentally, is the executive producer of this film about this production of Godspell. But there is one more name, one more unknown at the time, who was a part of that production at the Alexandra for the opening of Godspell. Jewish kid from Thunder Bay, who'd been playing piano at strip clubs on Yonge Street before he got his gig as the musical director of Godspell. And that individual was Paul Schaefer. Paul Schaefer went on to become a member of the SNL house band. He is the only member of the SNL band to briefly join the cast. He is the first person to ever say the word on Saturday Night Live. He is, of course, best known for his collaboration for decades with David Letterman as Letterman's musical director slash sidekick of sorts slash whipping boy. And here's a bit of Paul Schaefer trivia. He was offered the role of George Costanza on Seinfeld, but never returned Jerry Seinfeld's phone call. And Paul Schaefer's on Canada Land today. Our reporter, Ilana Gordon, caught up with him and a piano in Los Angeles. Wait for it.
So I want to play a quick game with you. I'm going to give you the name of some of your former Godspell cast members. And can you just give me one word to describe them at the time that you met them?
Okay.
Martin Short.
Never seen anything like it. Funniest guy I ever met, and he works really hard all the time.
Eugene Levy.
He is sort of the guru of comedy.
Gilda Radner.
Darling Angelette. Was we had here on Earth for far too short a time.
Andrea Martin.
Taught everybody else how to be funny.
That is a ringing endorsement. Dave Thomas.
Still a dear friend. The quickest, maybe the quickest guy I know. Well, right up there with Dave Letterman.
Just incredible improviser, incredibly fast, witty.
Fast with it, yeah.
Yeah.
You probably know Paul Schaefer best as the leader of the world's most dangerous band on Letterman.
I don't know what is wrong with me, Paul. Yeah. Is there something wrong with me?
Well, I know what's wrong with you. I happen to know what is wrong with you. You're sarcastic. You're abrupt with the guests. There's always a funny smell coming out of your office. You look terrible in tweed. You reek of Mexican aftershave. You do not understand how fractions work.
In all those years on Letterman, Schaefer has met almost everyone.
You've met so many famous people throughout your career. Is there anybody you haven't met that you've wanted to?
Well, of course, I didn't meet Elvis, and I didn't meet Sinatra. But I got close in both cases, having played for Sammy Davis a couple of times, and Carl Perkins, you know, wrote Blue Suede Shoes, played with him.
But once upon a time, back in 72, Paul was just a kid from Thunder Bay, playing gigs in Yonge Street strip clubs.
I had been playing around town trying to get going and in music. None of my friends cared. This particular job at the Brass Rail, and all my friends showed up. All of a sudden, they were interested in what I was doing musically.
That had to feel so flattering. I mean, your music is finally being appreciated.
It was kind of, I don't want to use the word titillating, but that's a real word. At the same time, embarrassing. As you could expect. Then I remember closing the night off, you know, and thanking the lovely and talented ladies of the Brass Rail Go-Go Club, Go-Go Establishment. And we'll, we thank you all for coming. Come back again. We're going to be here for the rest of our lives. So that, because that's the way it really felt. I said, oh, my God, this is what being a pro is going to be like. Gigs like this, I guess. I got this one crazy thing to play in a band that was going to go on a tour of Canadian missile bases in northern Quebec in the middle of wintertime in a storm. We left Toronto and went to Dorval Airport first somehow to pick up outfits for the dancers and then headed up north into Quebec in the blinding snowstorm and did two shows up there with a little variety show. And one of the dancers named Avril Chown said, I'm auditioning for a show called Godspell. It's a New York off-Broadway show. They're having a Canadian company. And Avril asked me the same thing. Would you come and play for me at my Godspell audition? And we'll learn a song from the record, from the cast album.
Do you remember what she asked for?
What song it was?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, a song from the show called Bless the Lord, a showstopper.
High note at the end.
First auditions were just an empty room, the director, and a piano.
So Paul was there to play for his friend Avril. But as the legend now goes, Paul's playing that day caught the ear of Stephen Schwartz. Schwartz wrote the music and lyrics for Godspell. And for any theater nerds out there, yes, he's also the Stephen Schwartz behind the more recent hit, Wicked. But back in 72, Schwartz liked what he heard and asked Paul to play for all the actors auditioning that day. As the auditions wrapped up, Schwartz asked Paul the question that would change his life forever.
At the end of the day, Stephen spoke to me again and said, can you get a band together and conduct? So that was my experience.
So that one question launched Paul's career and started forging the comedic and personal relationships that would change his life forever. Opened on June 1st, 1972, at the Royal Alexandra Theater. Dave Thomas, who joined the cast later in the run, remembers being blown away by the performance.
When I went to see the production on opening night, I was seeing amazingly talented people. Absolutely wonderful. Andrea was wonderful.
Mamma mia, that summer spicy, meatball.
And Marty was just a rocket. Unbelievable energy. Eugene, his dry, deadpan stuff.
Now that's the most ridiculous thing I am a boy.
We would get together after the Friday show and just talk about the show, what had happened that day.
I forget who coined it. It might have been Marty. It could have been Eugene. Friday night services.
Every Friday after the show.
Marty, Eugene, and Paul and myself. Dan Aykroyd or Gilda or Andrea or people like that would come by.
Catherine O'Hara and John Candy.
Lauren came around. That's where I first met Lauren.
Lauren Michaels from SNL. But back then, Lorne was just another Toronto kid hanging out at after-show house parties.
Every now and then, there's a kind of cluster effect of talent where they sort of feed off one another.
We hung out until 3, 4 in the morning. There really should be a plaque there at 1063 because you have the great comedy stars of the generation come through there.
When you think of Toronto at that time, I would compare it to Paris in the 20s.
You know, I mean, I guess.
Am I Hemingway then? Are you Hemingway? You know, who is who here?
I think the feeling was just that that talent had been dying to burst out of these kids all this time, and finally, pow, there they were.
Who I thought you'd be. See, I was told
you... expecting?
I think I was thinking Gary Bergdorf from MASH, and I realized that it's a totally different guy, because Gary has, as we say in the South,
a lot of his feathers have blown away, too, and so...
You're obsessed with this ball thing. This is my look. This is, you know, me. This is really the best I can do at this particular point, and I go with it.
Well, no, I think it's brave you've kept the eyebrows.
Look at yours.
In your book, you refer to Marty in the 70s as your unofficial life coach. You said he changed my vision of not only what it meant to be funny, but to live funny. How do you think he would have described your relationship at that time?
We got along musically right away. But I just looked at him and the rest of them and said, well, these people are having more fun than I am. I want to be more like them. And it was as simple as that. I started just sort of looking at things a little differently, more like they would, find the funny part of it.
Would you have described yourself as funny before Godspell?
No, I certainly was interested in funny people, though. Loved to stay up all night and have laughs, just like them. But I wasn't, you know, in their league at all. But I found that they were nice enough to include me.
A lot of people have credited it with jumpstarting Canada's reputation as a comedy powerhouse. Do you think the country still would have gotten there without Godspell, or would it just have taken a lot longer?
I don't think there's any doubt that these kids would have. Although to hear them put it, you know, they got their big break. God knows what would have happened. They would have had to just go home with their tails between their legs. That's the way they were talking, but they all would have been major stars. There's no containing the kind of talent that they had and drive.
Yeah.
The Toronto Company was absolutely legendary. How funny the people were. And then we've all heard of so many of them now.
Tired of ordinary television? Don't touch that dial. SCTV is now on the air. Starring John Candy, Eugene Levy.
Certainly there was no arguing with the success of SCTV.
Andrea Martin.
And how funny it was.
And Dave Thomas. Television like you've never seen it before. This is the SCTV Television Network.
Unlike anything that had ever been seen, even down here in the States.
50 of the neatest hits from 5 of the neatest guys. Yes, it's the 5 neat guys' neatest hits. Remember, let's have a party in my rec room.
Let's have a party in my rec room.
And on the same album.
So there was Toronto and various other locations in Canada were simultaneously becoming production towns, places where you could go to shoot a series or something. So a lot of things were changing. And I think there was more of a national scene was developing.
So, jumping back to SCTV, I think someone in the documentary mentioned that it emerged as a response to Lorne stealing all the talent away from Second City Toronto. What was the relationship like between the SCTV cast and the SNL cast? I mean, obviously there were lots of friends in
Yes, friends
two.
And mutual respect.
Any rivalries or just, you know, pure friendship?
I don't think so. These kids were really too good of friends to have any rivalries get in the way of that. Maybe it's the Canadian in them.
It's very possible. Or maybe you guys just realized that there was so much talent and so much work to go around that there didn't really need to be that rivalry.
It's all competitive, of course.
But different kind.
Kind of cutthroat competitive, but different when the Canadians are involved. Friendship's still more important.
So how can a documentary film like this one ever hope to capture the spirit of the 1972 Toronto Godspell?
Yeah.
Is this just a
dumb idea, Nick? Really foolish.
I hope it's not foolish. I mean, I don't know. Do you have footage of the show or?
It's really sad that nothing was, you know, there was no camera set up just to record it.
Well, good luck.
If I knew, I'd be sitting where you are.
Both the beauty and perhaps the sad thing about the theater is it's ephemeral.
I don't think you can capture the spirit of what I saw on opening night of the Royal Alex in Toronto. I think that's one of those experiences where you had to be there.
So the documentary's title, You Had to Be There, to me it perfectly captures the spirit of that time, because I think the reason the show has been mythologized the way that it has been is because until now you couldn't find it. You couldn't find tapes. You couldn't find, like, there was nothing. There's nothing on TikTok or Spotify. It just existed in the minds of the people who were there and the people who watched it. What do you hope people will take away from this peek into comedy history?
Well, that's a good question. Certainly shows how important that experience was to all of us. And it was a once-in-a-lifetime type of confluence of coming together of people. Maybe how rare that is.
Have you ever had another experience like it? I mean, you've worked in so many different facets of music and comedy and live entertainment, scripted, everything. Have you ever felt that same kind of energy?
Well, certainly it's hard to deny that Saturday Night Live had its own energy. And Letterman Show, too. You know, I've been really blessed, this career that I've had. But Godspell was, I think, the first time, certainly that I realized, you know, wow, you can come in contact with people that are right on your wavelength. And you just want to be around them all the time and get in after the show, get back to the theater as soon as you can. That's what it was like.
We were working with people who became our good, good, good friends. And those relationships just easily survived the years.
So cool to watch you guys get to reunite for the first time. How many of those people had you not seen, and for how long?
Well, of course, I see Marty, Eugene, Andrea. Four of us were together in Ottawa kind of recently. Andrea got the Governor General's Award.
So was Toronto in the early 70s really like Paris in the 1920s? A once-in-a-generation alignment of talent, timing, and chutzpah that reshapes the wider world, in this case, the comedic world?
When they say Paris in the 20s, I say, well, to me, it was more like something that I and my friends always aspired to, Sinatra and his Rat Pack. If you think, you know, read about Sammy Davis and Dean Martin, Shirley MacLaine, you know, a couple of gals in there, too, but Joey Bishop for writing this stuff and how much they drank. And how much they laughed. We had that going on in Toronto, I always say. We were the Rat Pack way back then. No topping it. Nothing has topped it for any of us.
That is your Canada Land for this week. I hope you liked today's show. You can email me about this show. My email address is jesse@canadaland.com, and I read all the emails I receive. Today's show was reported by Ilana Gordon and fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Bruce Thorson is our senior producer. Audio production and editing from Caleb Thompson. Max Collins is our director of audio. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land, and our theme music is by So Cold. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We'll talk about the uncancellation of John A. McDonald. His statue has done the work, just wants to contribute positively to society once again. We'll talk about the Weeb revolt against Bell Media's AI cartoon kiosk, but mostly, we'll talk about home invasions. What would Doug Ford do if some vegan hippie cyclist broke into his Etobicoke mansion and started ranting to Dougie's kids about critical race theory?
This guy has a weapon. You're going to use any force you possibly can to protect your family.
Wait for that. Harrison Lohman, managing editor of The Hub. Welcome back to the show.
So pleased to be with you, Jesse Brown.
Harrison, there is a news story that is kind of ricocheting around. Everyone's talking about it. Let's hear this news story as told by Ontario Premier Doug Ford.
Hey, everyone hear about the story in Lindsay? So this criminal that's wanted by the police breaks into this guy's house. This guy gives him a beating. And this guy gets charged. Like, and the other guy gets charged. I know if someone breaks into my house or someone else's, you're going to fight for your life. This guy has a weapon. You're going to use any force you possibly can to protect your family. I'm telling you, I know everyone would. I'd be scared to break into Kevon's. Look at this. He's like a linebacker. He beat the living out of the guy, as he should. I'm like, something is broken.
Something's broken, Harrison. This country's going to hell in a handbasket. Guy breaks into your house, you give him a beating, and you're the one going to jail?
It's beaten.
Give him a beating. And this has become a talking point, just sort of evidence of how backwards this liberal country of ours is. Here's what Pierre Poilievre said about it.
The law needs to be clear that if someone comes into your house uninvited to steal your property or harm your family, you need to be able to do whatever is necessary to stop them.
Daniel Smith chimed in on it.
Well, if you don't want to get shot or beaten up, don't break into people's houses. Pretty straightforward.
And the Conservatives are fundraising off of it. Here's the Conservative fundraising message. This went out to their email list. Warning! This is graphic. An Ontario man woke up in the middle of the night to find a scary, all caps, scary intruder in his home. He sprang into action to protect himself, his family, and his property. What did he get for his bravery? All caps read, criminal charges. A potentially violent, all caps, intruder broke into his home. He protected himself, and the radical, liberal justice system locked him up. And this intruder was already wanted by police for other crimes. This is insane. Conservatives value your life. Give us money, et cetera, et cetera.
In that newsletter, I think it says, with a hyperlink, are you with us, Patriot? Which I loved. Anytime you can get Patriot in there, chef's kiss from me.
All right. If you get your news from somebody other than Doug Ford, what actually happened here? Jeremy McDonald, a Kawartha Lakes, Ontario man, has been charged. Homeowner Jeremy McDonald has been charged with aggravated assault and assault with a weapon for defending himself against alleged burglar Michael Breen at 3 a.m. Okay, this is what I got from Jamie Sakranak's opinion piece on the National Post. It's a reported piece. There's a bit more to this story. Police have released few details about this case, aside from the fact that the defender allegedly used a knife. And police say that they were justified in laying these charges. Was it one too many stabs in the eyes of police, asks the National Post. Was a banana smile carved into Breen's face after the fact? Jesus Christ. We don't know because police won't say. So this guy caught an intruder in his house at 3 a.m.
The intruder had a weapon, too. You have to.
The intruder had a weapon, too, but he stabbed the guy, and we don't know exactly who struck first or what, but the guy had to be airlifted with life-threatening injuries. The case law around this, also mentioned in the Sarkanak piece in the Post, a 2016 incident where one Peter Cahill, a former Canadian Forces reservist, shot and killed a guy named Jonathan Stiers as Stiers rummaged through Cahill's truck.
A jury has found Peter Cahill not guilty of second-degree murder, but guilty of manslaughter in the shooting death of Jonathan Stires. Peter Cahill shot and killed Jonathan Stires in his driveway in 2016. During the trial, the Crown emphasized that Cahill didn't call 911 when he noticed someone on his property. Instead, he grabbed his shotgun and headed outside. Stires, who was from Six Nations, was shot twice. Cahill's girlfriend then called police.